The following is a paid program brought to you by My Philly Lawyer. The views and opinions expressed are those of the sponsor and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the station and its management.
Good morning. Court Radio is now in session. Call 215-227-2727. When you've got legal questions, we've got the answers. This is Court Radio. And now here's your host, Dean Weitzman.
Good morning and welcome to Court Radio. It's Sunday, May the 18th, 7 a.m. Wake up for some legal entertainment. I'm joined in the studio with my co-host, the one and only, the inimitable, the tiger of law, wow. David M. Rappaport.
Good morning.
Roar.
The tiger. Wow, yeah. What's that about?
Well, because you're just an angry tiger.
An angry tiger.
A hungry tiger when it comes to your clients. Hey.
Hey.
It's a beautiful Sunday in Philly.
It is.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I was just going to say to you, where's the year gone already? You said May 18th. I said, oh my God, it's May 18th already. But actually, thank God.
Yeah, winter was a tough one. Winter was a tough one. We welcome our guests from Delaware, New Jersey, Pennsylvania to Court Radio, the place where you get to ask your legal questions. Only one, folks. Don't make us click you off. Only one. And if you have a second, you can get back in the queue. And by just calling 215-227-2727, that's the legal number for all legal issues in the tri-state area.
In life.
Yes. We're actually going up to New York to meet a client on Tuesday in Flushing, New York. Mm. Lawyers in New York State needed counsel locally. And they had heard of the reputation of My Philly Lawyer, and so we're going up to speak with a new client up there. So we will go far and wide on the right cases to help clients get their matters resolved. 215-227-2727. Let's grab Patricia from Philly. Hey, Patricia, welcome to Court Radio.
Oh, good morning. I'm right on.
You're right on. Do you know why you're right on?
Do you have any?
You are the first caller to call before the show began. And so you were really ready for Court Radio.
Yeah.
You were queued up. And so we wanted to reward you. So what's your question, dear Patricia?
Yes, good morning. I wanted to find out, I'm trying to pay my car note up 3 months in advance. They said that's the most amount I could pay, 3 or 4 payments ahead. I wanted to start, once I paid that, I wanted to keep paying, sending in partial payments. But they said that that wouldn't go towards the car note, that will go towards the principal of the car. I want to know, is that a good idea?
Yeah, well, that's your idea. The principal is the original amount of your loan. So if you bought a car and you have a loan for $8,000, each month that you pay a payment, part of that goes to the reducing that $8,000, and part of it goes to paying your interest payment. What they're saying is if you keep on sending the money, they don't apply it to interest ahead, and that's a good thing. They're going to apply it to the principal, reducing the principal that you owe them until it's down to zero, and then they'll send you your note or the title to the car. So yes, that's perfectly great. That's exactly what you want to do, and you even, you know, you want to say when you send them the 4 payments that any excess payments should be applied to principal.
Yeah, make sure you write that on the check or write it in the notice that you send them when you send the money in, just to make sure.
All right, Patricia, listen, stay on the line, okay? We're going to have Larry get your address because you're getting a Court Radio T-shirt.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
I received one. I can get another one.
Oh, now she wants not one, but two.
No, you already received one? Is that what you said?
Yes, I did.
That's so honest.
An honest woman. We'll give you a second.
We'll send
Patricia.
You another one.
Give us your friend's size. Hold on the line, dear.
I'm my sister. Thank you.
Uh-huh. Oh, Larry's going crazy, folks. You got to have some patience for the man. He's
working the board. He's working the phones. He's got 4 hands today.
All right, let's get another caller done. Let's talk to Debbie from Philly. We got a lot of Philly callers today. Hi, Debbie. Welcome to Court Radio.
Good morning.
Good morning. What's your question?
I had a question. I was getting these letters from these attorneys saying that I was being sued in silver in the courts or something.
Uh-huh.
And I received a package with like five letters or something this week that said I was being sued. I don't know. I mean, I guess it was a car that I had gotten like a few years ago. I had like two cars. One they repoed. And I just wanted to know, is there any way that I can make some kind of arrangements with them? Do I have to go to court? Or I'm not really sure what I need to do.
I'll let David try to.
Well, how did they send it to you? Did you certified mail, or did someone hand it to you?
Someone actually gave it, because I live with my mother. Somebody actually handed it to me.
Okay. Well, you've been served. What that means is you've been served, so you can't let it go. You only have a certain amount of time. Within 20 days, you got to act. Really, it's 30 days total before something happens. But yes, the answer to your question, the simple question is yes. What I would do if I were you is if you want to handle it yourself and you think you can do that reasonably, would call the attorney who's handling the matter for the person who's suing you or making the claim against you and see if you can make arrangements. See if they're willing to accept some type of payment arrangement without having to go to court. If not, then you might have to go to court, in which case, is it a small claims court? Is it something that's a small matter?
Well, it was for a car.
Okay, so, but is it in small claims? Is it in municipal court?
How much are they suing you for?
How much is the amount?
I didn't even see an amount on the paper, so I'm not really sure.
Well, how much did you owe on the car, if you remember?
It was like $9,000. It was like $9,000, but I remember them telling me that they was going to, like, sell the car or something.
Right.
And then I had talked to maybe, like, 3 years after that, and they want to settle for $6,000.
Well, in all honesty, in my opinion, that's enough money that you probably should seek the advice of a lawyer. Because if you don't and you try and handle it yourself and they play around with you, that's a large judgment to have. So it might be worth it for you to spend a little bit of money just to get a lawyer to protect your interests. And a lawyer could probably easily work out an arrangement with the other lawyer. They really just want some type of assurance they're going to get payment. Believe me, they know the worst thing they want to do is have to go to court and just get a judgment and stare at the paper for years and years. They'd rather they would welcome you paying them over a period of time in an agreement and doing it that way. So that would be the way to do it.
Debbie, stay on the line. Stay on the line. We're going to get your address for a free Court Radio T-shirt. Hold on.
Yep. Thank you.
All right. Yep. I definitely think that's correct, David.
Of course it is.
Too much money. Too much money.
Too much money.
All right. Donald Sterling refuses to pay a fine.
Yeah, I don't get. I mean, look. Again, I think I said this last time. I'm not condoning what he said at all. But the whole issue of the privacy and bothers me. But still, now that it's all out in the open and it happened, you have to deal with it, right? And he just seems to be compounding his idiocy.
I heard he came back on and did some other stupid...
Well, he did an interview with Anderson Cooper.
Yes.
On CNN. And just, I mean, Anderson Cooper, if you saw I saw a little bit of the video. I didn't see a lot of the interview, but he just stared. He was staring at Donald Sterling with a look on his face of, you can't be
serious.
A serious person right now. And the guy was just digging his hole deeper and deeper and deeper. I think he's a little crazy.
Yeah, maybe he's senile.
Yeah,
now.
Maybe
he's lost his ability to kind of think clearly.
He's a little nuts. He's got no barometer in his head as to what not to say, and he's got some sick thoughts about just race relations and what's going on. He doesn't think there's racism in our country, and
I predict by the beginning of the next basketball season, he's gone. That's it.
Well, yeah, and he's refusing to pay the fine. I don't know what their recourse is. If they can, I guess they can kick him out if just for that.
They will vote as a group.
But I mean, for not paying, whether they can sue him for that money. I mean, they fined him, so I don't know what their...
$250,000 to him is like,
it was $2.5 million, wasn't it?
Even $2.5 million.
Yeah, that's still like a petty cash to him.
Yeah.
I think he gave that girl, the one who leaked the audio, I think he gave her four cars and $250,000 in cash, just like, here,
Yeah.
Go buy yourself something. $250,000. Here.
He's going to be out, I predict, before the season begins. But anyway, yeah. He's just refusing to own up to what he's done and to make the apologies. And certainly he has no intention of walking away from the team at this point.
Yeah, I don't get the whole thing, but whatever.
All right, we're going to move on to our hot-button topic today, David.
Oh, this is something dear to our hearts.
Certainly, yes, it is. And I would say even to you, a little more dear.
Yeah, I guess.
We have on the line, we got Jay Feinman, who's a professor at the Rutgers Law School. Good morning, Jay, and welcome to Court Radio.
Good morning. Thank you.
Uh-huh. Well, let's tell people about it. You're not just a professor. You're a distinguished professor of law at Rutgers. And you've also, I think you've sat as an acting dean of the law school for a period of time. You're really Rutgers up over there. And you wrote a book. The book is called Delay, Deny, and Defend. And when did you write that book, Jay?
2010.
2010. All right, not that long ago. It's available on Amazon. I saw it was a also available as a hard book, which we have a copy of, but it's also available as an electronic download.
And the paperback on Amazon.com is the best way to get it.
Paperback on Amazon. There you go.
A worthy read, I might tell you.
Yeah, yeah. This is a term of endearment, delay, deny, and defend that represents the behavior of insurance companies. Why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
Well, insurance companies are businesses. The businesses want to make a profit. The largest cost an insurance company has is how much it pays out in claims, either to its policyholders or to people who sue its policyholders. And if they can delay payment, if they can deny valid claims in whole or part, and if they can force people to litigation and aggressively defend that litigation, it increases their bottom line.
Yeah, now, one of the things I got from the book initially was that this wasn't always the business model of the insurance company. This seems to be something that has developed over time.
Now, it comes and goes, but right. In the 1980s and in the 1990s, the insurance companies were under a lot of pressure, financial pressure. There were a number of large catastrophes, hurricanes, medical costs, which are a major part of auto insurance, was increasing, and it was a tough time for them. So they brought in high-powered consultants, McKinsey and Company, Accenture, and those folks. And the consultants looked at the business model and said, well, the best way that you can save money, increase profits, is to pay out less in claims. And they went through each kind of claim that came in, auto insurance, homeowners insurance, catastrophe insurance, figured out where the money could be saved, and instituted a new business model, the delay, deny, defend model.
Yeah, which it seems to me to be, as I always say this, I say this to Dean all the time and to a lot of my clients, that being in the insurance business is one of the greatest businesses to be a part of if you own one, because you're selling a product that not only are people afraid to use, they have to pay for it and they want to pay for it, but then they're afraid to use it. And then you can pretty much get away with fighting them to give them what they've paid for. It's just crazy. I've never seen anything like it. And basically, they get away with a lot of that. So,
well, it's true. It's, you know, there's a couple of reasons for that. One, as you say, is, you know, people, when they have an insurance claim, particularly a large claim, they're not only financially vulnerable, but they're emotionally vulnerable. It's a stressful time.
Right.
And that puts a lot of the cards in the insurance company's side of the table. The other thing is, insurance is complicated. You know, my homeowner's insurance policy is 65 pages long, and I think I understand it, but I'm an insurance lawyer. And if I want to find something there, I have to sit down pretty carefully, read through, make an outline, and so forth. Most people don't read their policies, wouldn't understand their policies if they read them. So they file a claim with the insurance company, and the insurance company says, well, you're not entitled to be paid, or you only get a few dollars here. Most people will assume that the insurance company knows what it's doing and take what's offered.
Right.
You know, in Pennsylvania, making a comparison, because you're from, you know, the other side of the bridge, in Pennsylvania, we have a fairly august bad faith statute. Insurance companies that act in bad faith, that now, you know, it's one thing to delay and defend when the person who is bringing the claim against the insurance company is committing fraud. They're overreaching. Okay, I mean, insurance company is a business, and they want to pay the fair amount to the person. And when the person's asking for more than they should, I don't expect the insurance company to bend over. But when the claimant, we're talking about a valid claim, and the amount being requested is by all measures fair and reasonable, and the insurance company fails to provide that, and defends, denies, and delays the claim for no good reason. Here in Pennsylvania, if a judgment comes in excess of the verdict, then we can seek damages from the insurance company in excess of the verdict, in excess of their policy limits. Mm-hmm. Can you, in New Jersey, it seems that that statute isn't as robust as it is here.
Yeah, Pennsylvania has a statute. New Jersey does not. But I think we have to separate two kinds of cases. You know, one is the kind of case where you have your liability insurance. You're in an auto accident and somebody else sues you. Your insurance company, as you say, doesn't settle the case promptly, and there's a judgment against you for more than the value of your policy. In that case, theoretically, you're liable for the excess. And in most states, Pennsylvania and New Jersey, if the insurance company has acted unreasonably, you can sue them, and they have to pay the whole thing. The greater problem, where Pennsylvania is way ahead of New Jersey, is cases of something like homeowners insurance, where you're filing the claim. Somebody's not suing you. Insurance companies, as you say, they have to protect against fraud. Insurance companies can make mistakes. That's okay. Everybody makes mistakes. But when they act unreasonably, then they should be punished. You should be able to sue them for more. You can do that much more effectively in Pennsylvania than you can in New Jersey. In New Jersey, neither the courts nor the legislature have taken a strong stand against this kind of behavior by the insurance companies.
And that's the strange thing about New Jersey, because typically when I look at New Jersey, they're at the forefront of protecting their citizens. When new laws come into being, it's usually California and New Jersey which leads the nation. But in this area, you're falling way by the wayside. I don't understand. And I think that, you know, you mentioned in the book that you can find redress at the help of the insurance commissioner's office. I know you wrote it. I don't know that I agree with it. I find that the insurance commissioners in most states are, you know, just puppets of the big business lobby.
Well, I think there's a strong element of that. Insurance commissioners or the insurance department does a number of things. Probably the most important thing they do is they check the finances of insurance companies. They make sure that insurance companies actually have the money to pay the claims as they commit. Yeah. And that's a system that works pretty well.
That's never a problem.
Even in the financial crisis after 2008, by and large, insurance companies did not go out of business.
I was going to say that's a no-brainer in my opinion, because people don't realize it, but insurance company profit, the big ones, Allstate, State Farm, all those, their net profits are in the billions every year. Billions.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's something else I wanted to bring up to you, because you mentioned in the book about you mentioned it earlier, McKinsey, and how over the years, not too long ago, we were able to get those documents through litigation, and they fought not to release the documents, particularly Allstate I'm talking about, and they showed the documents showed that they were doing things, particularly to, you know, the subject of your book, delay, deny, and defend claims just on the basis of trying to discourage claims and discourage people from bringing them. The problem I see with all this is that they make so much money that it doesn't seem to me, and I do this every day, I've been doing it for 26 years, it doesn't seem to me that there's any amount of money that's been punishable to them that's stopping them from doing it. I mean, they're willing to pay millions of dollars in damages, and they keep doing what they're doing, this behavior. And you mentioned in your book how regulated the insurance industry is, but I don't know if I agree that there's regulation that's really consumer-oriented.
Well, I think both of these points go together.
Yeah.
There's important regulation. The financial regulation works very well.
Okay.
What works less well in most states is protecting consumers when they have claims. Now, in Pennsylvania, New Jersey, most states, it's worthwhile to go to the insurance department, file a complaint, see if they can help you out. But it's not what they do most, and it's not what they do best. And part of it, as you say, is, you know, there's a lot of money here, and money buys influence. Part of it is insurance departments tend to be understaffed, and they spend all day talking to people in the insurance industry, and they spend less time during the day talking to consumers.
Right.
So this just is not high on their agenda.
Yeah.
And that's why people need to sue, as you say, they can effectively in Pennsylvania, and why we need to strengthen the law in other states. As you say, it's a little weak in New Jersey.
Right. All right, let's talk to Emmanuel from Philly, who's got an auto accident question. And welcome to Court Radio, Emmanuel.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning. What's your question?
I have a little dilemma here. I have I have the title of a 1992 Cadillac Eldorado. I had an accident in my automobile, and I had it towed by a specific tow company. And from that tow company, I contacted a paint and auto collision repair company. Had it towed by that tow company. I gave them a check for a certain amount of money, the tow company, and had the tow the paint and repair company. Paid the tow company, towed my car from the tow company to their location, and in return had a paint and repair company repair my automobile with the check I gave them. Now a little time had expired, and during that little time that expired, the paint and repair company gave me some money I back out of the check. The balance of the money was put toward repairing the automobile and painting and restoring the automobile. Now a little more time expired, and the company went out of business, and individuals took and disappeared out from the company. Now the physical building is still there of the company, but the individuals have disappeared. No trace. I can't find them in the phone book nowhere. One of the president of the company, he died. He passed on. I located him. And
okay. Okay. Hold on. You use the term a little time has expired.
Yeah.
I want to know how much is a little time. How much exactly from the date of your accident until today?
The date of my accident was October 8th, 2006.
Okay, that's it. I heard enough. Listen, there's something called a statute of limitations that most claims fall under. And that means that you have to file suit if you're going to get a judgment against somebody within that statute. Even a bona fide claim, they stole my car, they took my car and they won't return it, conversion, whatever the claim is, it has a statute of limitations. Could be as little as 1 year and as much as 4 years, 6 years, but it isn't, what is that, 8 years. It isn't 8 years under any description of what you've described. And so I would say that the statute of limitations is gone and that you need to act quicker to retrieve your property. Your 92 Cadillac is probably forever gone. So just forget about that Cadillac and move on to your next car. And next time, you'll call Court Radio when it happens. But we weren't around in 06, so I can't fault you for that. 215-227-2727. When we come back from break, we're going to come back to Jay Fineman, Professor Emeritus at Rutgers University. You're not really emeritus, just kidding. But you're going to talk to us about your book, Delay, Deny, and Defend, when we come back. And if you've got any insurance claims pending that you want to talk to Jay about or David and I, now's the time to do it. 215-227-2727. We'll be right back.
If you've been injured on the job and are entitled to workers' comp, you need someone fighting for you from the start. Call Jeffrey Gross, attorney at law. Don't rely on your employer or insurance company to get it right. Call 215-512-1500. If you're entitled to workers' comp or it's being challenged, Jeffrey Gross can help get the money you deserve, and he won't get paid unless you get paid. Call 215-512-1500. Jeffrey Gross, attorney at law, representing Pennsylvania's injured workers for more than 20 years. For 20 years, Center City Medical Center has provided premium expert medical services for Philadelphia. Whether you need musculoskeletal rehab or an immigration physical, call 888-945-EXAM. Our board-certified physicians have more than 80 years' experience from post-injury rehab to DNA paternity testing. To make an appointment at one of our three convenient locations, call 888-945-EXAM. Get premium expert care. Center City Medical Center, serving Northeast, North, and Center City, Philadelphia.
The following is a paid program brought to you by My Philly Lawyer. The views and opinions expressed are those of the sponsor and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the station and its management.
Need more legal answers? Here's more Court Radio with your host, Dean Weitzman.
All right, welcome back to Court Radio. It's still Sunday, May 18th, and beautiful outside, but you got another 30-plus minutes of legal questions and answers at Court Radio. I'm joined with my co-host, David Rappaport.
Good morning.
And we have the distinguished professor from Rutgers University, Rutgers Law School, Jay Feinman. Welcome, Jay.
Thank you.
Who has written my favorite book.
Yes, Delay, Deny, Defend.
I wish every client had a copy of this book.
Well, they can get a copy by going to Amazon. They can get a paperback copy of Delay, Deny, and Defend, and it will tell them about the insurance company tactics that they've used since the early 90s in trying to avoid to pay people's legitimate claims. And, you know, this isn't the first rodeo that David and I have been to. Actually, we had a case where the insurance company sent their insured to what they call an independent medical exam. You really think it's independent, Professor Feinman?
It's not independent. It's not for medical purposes, and it hardly qualifies as an examination.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah.
Okay. So as a result of this examination, the insurance company got a report. The report said that the patient had some legitimate complaints. He was injured, shockingly. And the insurance company sent it back to the doctor and said, you can do better. The doctor then sent a second report that didn't quite look as good as the first report for the claimant.
Right.
And that's what they sent to the lawyer for the claimant.
Except. Attached to that report.
Yeah, attached to that report was the first report.
By accident.
And so we brought a lawsuit against the insurance company for bad faith in Pennsylvania, and we also sued the doctor and the center that he worked for, this independent mill.
Yeah.
And
who made about $1 million.
Here's the deal. The reason we can't be any more specific about naming names of insurance companies is that we resolved the claim on behalf of the claimant for a lot of money. And with that came a confidentiality clause.
Yeah, and that's one of the things you point out in your book about, you know, when they we were talking earlier about, you know, going after them, and when they, meaning the insurance companies, get their back against the wall and have to eventually pay up. That's one of their tactics, actually, of demanding confidentiality, and then no one knows what happened.
Sure, it's a huge problem. I mean, you think of it from the point of view of somebody buying insurance.
Right.
When you want to buy insurance, you're buying security, you're buying peace of mind. How do you know whether a company is going to be responsible when it comes to paying claims? You can find out that 15 minutes can save you 15% or more in your car insurance, but you can't find out the result of a lot of this litigation. As we talked about before, there aren't enough complaints filed with state insurance departments. That's not a reliable indicator. The insurance companies, the insurance commissioners have the data on which companies pay claims and which don't, but they don't release it to consumers. So we can look at consumer reports. You can go by anecdotes. But as you say, a lot of this stuff is secret, and it works to the disadvantage of ordinary folks.
Yeah, it takes somebody like yourself, maybe. This could be a project for one of your grad students to maintain a list and, you know, to file suit under the sunshine laws and get as much information as you can. And then you become the list keeper and you keep the list of bad insurance companies. Something to think about.
I'd like to do that. Unfortunately, both the companies and the insurance departments consider this information confidential. Insurance companies got laws passed in a lot of states saying information about claims can't be released. They get it in the aggregate, but consumers can't get it. There are some folks trying to parse the financial data and come up with some information for consumers. There's a new website called InjuredMoney.com that I'm not affiliated with, but fellows trying to look at the insurance company finances, see who pays out more in claims and who pays out less. But in the meantime, people just have to go on by word of mouth.
It's not much different than medical malpractice situation where we as consumers can't get a lot of information on doctors and past malpractice claims. And a lot of it's called what we call peer review, where we can't get the information.
Yeah, it's a very, very tough situation. And as we say, it's complicated. And look, insurance to people now is mostly sold on the basis of price, not quality.
Right.
Geico spent $1 billion last year advertising to consumers.
Wow.
And none of that advertising talked about how responsible they are in paying claims. So if it's Geico or Allstate or State Farm, you just don't have the information. And people ought to go to their government and demand it.
No, it's funny. We're going to take a call in 1 second. But you say that Geico by themselves spent $1 billion on advertising. And the funny thing is that there are still people, and I've seen them on blogs and stuff. This is where you see these people. I don't know, really, I don't know who they are. Maybe they're claims reps. But they say, oh, you know, you got to have a soft spot in your heart for insurance companies because everybody's always attacking them.
Right.
And poor insurance companies, people are, the American people ask for too much, and they think every case is a case, and blah, blah, blah.
We're too litigious, and the lawsuits are ruining the businesses, and yeah, okay.
Yeah, they've been pretty effective in promoting that idea, and it's affected
right.
The way politicians think. As you know, it's affected the way jurors think when you go to trial.
No kidding.
It's important to make sure that the jury understands that it's about the claim before them at that moment and that person's injuries. Let's talk to Mike from Drexel Hill, who's got a personal injury question. Good morning, Mike, and welcome to Court Radio.
Good morning, gentlemen. Good morning. Jay, David, Dean, I thank you for your great, really great service to the community. I consumed a non-sugar sweetener, which has caused me really serious harm, and I'm curious what you would think of that.
Okay, well, the question, I guess, anytime you have a product consumption case is, was the product in some way defective, or was there, you know, in this case, a failure to warn that it could cause some sort of the problem that you're experiencing? Was the problem a known problem? A lot more information would be needed to render an opinion on that. But if it were a contaminated product and it was not made according to the recipe that was supposed to be in there, that's one thing. Then you need the product so it can be analyzed. If it was made according to the recipe and it was a whole, you know, it was a good product, but it reacted to you in a way that the company knew it could and they should have warned about it, then that's a whole different claim. You know, so which was it? Which of those two
was it?
All
of those things.
It was all of those
all
things.
Of them, yeah.
So
I didn't even know it was a non-sugar sweetener. I've never consumed knowingly artificial stuff in my life. In fact, I have a nickname for being such a picky eater.
Uh-huh. Well, some non-sugar sweeteners can be, you know, some doctors think they're sort of neurotoxins that they can really screw you up if you consume them. It's something there are attorneys who specialize in food claims. One that comes to mind who has a national presence is actually, I believe, in Washington, the state of, whose name doesn't come to me right now. But I'm sure if you Google a food product lawyer and put in Washington for the state, you will find him. Give them a call and see if your claim has some legs. And they're the ones I would go to if I were in your position.
Thank you, gentlemen.
All right. Take care. Have a great Sunday. 215-227-2727. That's the number to call. So delay Deny and Defend is available at Amazon. How many of those books you sell?
We've sold several thousand. As you say, there's a lot of interest, not just among lawyers and insurance people, but ordinary consumers who don't understand what's happening to them or think they're the only one who's being mistreated by their insurance company. And what the book does is puts it in perspective, makes them realize they're not alone, and this is a bigger problem.
Has there been any backlash from the insurance industry? Have you been threatened?
Well, I haven't been threatened.
I know. I'm kidding.
No,
but
they disagree with it, and all the facts in the book can be verified. There's no question about that. It's the interpretation. You know, what's the attitude of the company? How big a problem is this? I think it's a big problem. The insurance companies think it's not such a big problem, that occasional mistakes are made, but there's no systematic effort to underpay claims. You know, one of the surprising things about this to me was that I had initially thought, if you're an insurance company, you want to save money on paying claims, what you should do is cut down on the big claims. Turns out it's just the opposite.
Right.
You don't save money on $1 million claims. You save money on $10,000 claims if you can knock a few hundred or a few thousand dollars off of them, because there's so many of them.
Right.
And because people can't fight back, they don't have the emotional resources, or it's just not worth it for a few hundred or a few thousand dollars. Can't get a lawyer to take the case. And it adds up to a lot.
Question is, and this is really gets to the to a lot of the meat of whether one should hire a lawyer, is what is the value of my claim? How does somebody who's been in one accident or two accidents in their lifetime have the resources to value that the value of the injuries and the loss of life's enjoyment that they've experienced when dealing with an insurance company who's handled hundreds of thousands, millions of claims?
Yeah, the ordinary person doesn't, and it applies to all kinds of claims. If you're injured, you know what your medical expenses are, and you sort of know what your lost income is, though you may not think of everything that you've spent out of pocket, but you don't know what damages are available to you. If you have damage to your property, you file a homeowner's insurance claim. Most people don't have either the expertise to know what they're entitled to under the policy, or to actually evaluate what the damage is and how much it would cost to repair it. People typically underestimate how damaging ordinary accidents in the home can be. Water damage, smoke damage, that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's why we've always advocated using a public adjuster if you don't know, or if their claim is big enough, because you for that very reason. It's money well spent to have a reputable public adjuster work on your behalf to, you know, read your policy and go to the insurance company and demand all that you're entitled to.
A public adjuster or an experienced insurance lawyer. Look, most of us aren't expert enough to know the policy, the law, and the physical damage. So we need professional help, and you just have to make sure you get good help to make sure somebody's on your side.
Talking in real numbers, if you have a personal injury claim worth $10,000, you pay a lawyer 40%, your net is $6,000. That same claimant could get bought out by an insurance company for $2,500, for $3,000. So I often find that that when insurance companies are dealing with claimants, they're making an offer so below the value of the case that even when you pay a public adjuster, as David suggested, or when you pay a lawyer, and even when that lawyer's fees are maybe as much as 40%, you're still netting an amount of money that is way more than the insurance company would have offered you in the first instance.
Yeah, it's often the case. And in many of these cases, either the lawyer or some other professional will be willing to evaluate your case up front to figure out roughly, is it worth your time to hire the lawyer? And if it's not, then there's likely to be no fee or a modest fee. And if it is, then, as you say, you come out ahead at the end of the process.
Yeah, we've had clients from time to time who have gotten offers from insurance companies and come in and asked us our opinion as to the appropriateness of that offer in light of the injuries that we knew at that time. Let's talk to Adrian from South Jersey, who's got a homeowner's insurance issue. Hey, Adrian, welcome to Court Radio.
Yes, good morning. How are you?
Good, thanks. What's your question?
I think in the scheme of what's going on, I think I'm in the delay part of my issue. About 3 years ago, I had a fire in my home. I'm very close to paying off my home. I was given the first quarter of my insurance payment, and I gave that to the contractor that I hired to do the work. He was doing a really, really bad job. He was filing false information for permits, so I fired him. Now that he's fired, and I can't seem to get the rest of the money to be released to get a new contractor so the home can be finished. Like I said, it's been 3 years. I'm still paying mortgage, and I'm at a standstill because I can't seem to get the rest of the money released because I've fired this contractor. And the one reason I've been given as to why the money hasn't been released is because I have to have some type of paperwork from him saying that he no longer works for me. But, of course, when you fire someone, there's bad blood, so, of course, I can't get the paperwork. So I'm, like, stuck. And, of course, I live in New Jersey, so I'm not exactly sure what to do next because money is running out, trying to maintain a house that I can't live in as well as live.
Well, one thing you want to do, and I didn't hear you say this, is retain the services of an attorney who can force the insurance company to abide by the terms of the contract. And
I have looked into a couple of attorneys in my area, and I don't know what it is. The first one, she just was horrible. She wouldn't return calls. She wouldn't answer certified letters. It's just crazy.
Right.
Is this a contractor that you selected or one that was recommended to you by the insurance company?
It was one that I selected. Well, it was someone that was recommended to me by someone else.
Okay. Because we know sometimes insurance companies will have preferred contractors, and then it's easier to get them to lean on them.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Yeah, sometimes insurance companies will have a list of preferred contractors, and then if you use one of them, it's kind of like almost an agent of the insurance company, and the insurance company has put themselves out, and you can apply some pressure in that way. But,
the bottom line is you got to get somebody on this. Yeah.
And because what we started the show with was a conversation about statute of limitations. It doesn't go forever. And so you've got,
right.
you're 3 years in. Now, there may be a tort statute that's gone. That's a 2-year statute. But you have contract statutes, which are longer than 3 years. So you're not out of statute vis-a-vis the contract. But everything emanates from that contract. It's the beginning and end of your relationship with your insurance company, especially in New Jersey that doesn't have necessarily a statute like we do in Pennsylvania. So you got to look at the contract and you got to see if their refusal is permitted in the contract. And that's not,
I doubt it.
That's not an analysis that you should do, because the other thing that an attorney would look at is whether the contract was ambiguously written, and in this area, maybe it isn't very clear. And if it's not clear, then it would probably be interpreted against the person or entity that made it, which in this case would be the insurance company. So again, you need a legal analysis. You have to come to an attorney with your contract in hand. Okay, do you have a copy of it?
Yes.
All right. It may cost you something to have that in that initial conference, but it sounds to me like, what's the amount of money? What's that 3/4 of the money left in the coffers of the insurance company? How much is that?
The first quarter was $175,000, and there was like 2 more in the same amount that is set to be given.
Okay, so
I think it's worth it to get an attorney.
So you got,
for God's sake,
you've got
the earlier conversation. Call the Department of Banking and Insurance in Trenton.
Yeah.
And explain this to them and see if they will reach out to the insurance company.
So you've got 350.
I'm so sorry. When he speaks, it breaks for me.
Okay. I'm going to tell you what he said. Call the Office of Banking and Insurance in Trenton and report this and let them know what this insurance company is doing to you. But I'll add also that you've got $350,000 potentially at stake here.
Right.
You should be retaining the services of an attorney. And again, it may cost something, but you want to be with a competent attorney to handle this claim. And then, you'll forget about it. Let somebody else who knows what they're doing handle it, and you'll get your money.
I'm not promising this, but you may actually be able to get attorney's fees back ultimately if the attorney, is able to push them and do get them to do what they should have done, maybe they'd be willing to pay for any excess fees that you were charged. It's possible. Right. So you know, there's enough, as Dean said, as we all said, you got to get somebody. This is a lot of money.
Adrian, stay on the line, and Larry's going to get your address for a Court Radio T-shirt.
That's worth $5. Yeah.
Ten. And if you need counsel on this, give us a call during the week, 215-227-2727.
Okay, thank you.
All right, hold on. And if anybody else is listening and you have legal questions regarding your claims, or you have questions for Jay Fineman, professor at Rutgers Law School, please give us a call at 215-227-2727. That's the number to call from 7 to 8, but it's the number to call all week long. 215-227-2727. You know, Jay, there was, I don't know, maybe about, I want to say maybe about 10 or maybe longer years ago, the insurance companies started bantering a term called MIST. Would you tell us what that is?
Sure. MIST stands for Minor Impact Soft Tissue. So you're in an auto accident. It's not a catastrophic accident, you know, the typical sort of rear-ender. And the insurance companies argue, well, in low-impact collisions like that, where there are no broken bones or other things that show up on an X-ray, you can't be seriously injured. And there are a lot of experts that they hire around the country, biomechanics and medicine and other things like that, to try to prove this. So they don't pay these large numbers of small claims. In fact, it's remarkably easy to suffer back injuries, neck injury, other sorts of injuries. Don't show up on X-rays, even in low-speed auto crashes. So the insurance company would say, we're not going to pay anything for these claims, or we're going to pay very little. And because there are so many of them, it generates a lot of income.
Yeah. And what they do as a practicing trial attorney is that they come into court, and their entire claim is based on a photograph of the property damage, their defense of the claim. So they'll blow up a photograph showing a small dent, paint transfer, scratches, cracked lens on a brake light, and they blow that photograph up to a 4x8, you know, poster board, and they sit it in the courtroom, and the jury looks at it for 2 or 3 days worth of trial. And at the end, they stand up and say, do you really think they're injured if this is what the car looked like? And then they sit back down, and that's the end of their case. And juries, by and large, Philadelphia juries, Camden juries, buy it hook, line, and sinker. And no matter what an expert, maybe a doctor who's been treating the claimant says, it's very difficult to dissuade them that that didn't cause an injury, or that that did cause an injury.
Sure. And as we said before, you know, a lot of these cases never make it to court. People think that the insurance company is the expert. They know they hurt. Their neck hurts, their back hurts, but the insurance company says, well, you must have had a pre-existing condition, or it was something else. We're not responsible. They don't go see a lawyer to find out what they're really entitled to, and it's tragic in many cases.
Yeah, when they do see a lawyer, the most egregious thing, I think, is that the insurance company in these missed cases has the idea that they're going to, they use the delay part of what, the denying delay part, and they force the claimant to get an attorney and file a lawsuit, and then they'll take it all the way, which makes it economically infeasible for a lot of attorneys and a lot of claimants to even deal with it. And that's sure. Their whole reason they do that.
Yeah, it's not unusual for an insurance company to spend $10,000 litigating a $5,000 case.
Right. I've seen it all the time.
It makes it unprofitable for an attorney to take that. And the delay part, you know, Warren Buffett, who owns a lot of insurance companies, including Geico, talks about float. You pay the premiums, but the insurance company doesn't have to pay that money out until the claims come in. In the meantime, they invest it. Warren Buffett says, this is great because we get to invest money that's not ours.
Yeah.
The longer they can hold on to the money, the more their profits are.
Yep. I mean, that makes a lot of business sense, but they're not giving the product that they promised. So
They don't give the product they promised. Well, let me float one last thing by you, Jay. Years ago, there was a term used that I hadn't heard before. And it was actually, I think, an Allstate adjuster who called me. Oh, maybe it was a post adjuster. It was an Allstate claims rep. By the way, what's the difference between an adjuster and a claims rep?
They call them all different sorts of things. There is no difference.
No, except nowadays, as I think you pointed out in the book, there used to be very skilled, and there still are, very skilled adjusters who know what they're doing. But one of the tactics is hiring, young, fresh out of college kids who really aren't experienced to handle the claims, which can be very frustrating because they don't know the value of a claim. They don't really know, how to handle it. And they're basically just told to, offer this, offer that. They're talking heads, and you can't get past them.
Yeah, well, the term I was looking for was a term that was used by an Allstate adjuster years ago called Colossus. Mm. And they said to me, Dean, we would pay you what you want on this claim, but Colossus says it's only worth $5,000. Right. I said, who's Colossus? What is that? We can't tell you about that, but it is trust us, it's accurate. Have you heard that term before?
Sure. Colossus is a computer program that the adjuster, the claims personnel, inputs the basic facts about the accident, some of the facts from the medical report, but not all of it. And the computer tells them how much the case is worth. You know, it goes back to David's point that adjusters are less professionally trained than they used to be. A lot of times what they do is they'll sit in front of a computer, they input information, the computer spits out the number, and they're bound to that number. It's very hard to persuade them, sometimes impossible to persuade them, that the case is actually worth more than that, and that's why people end up suing. It's become highly systematic. It's not the case where individual adjusters make mistakes or are out to cheat people. There's a system in place, and Colossus is part of that system. There are other computer programs. There's for property insurance claims. There's similar sorts of things. And it takes the discretion away, and in many cases, it results in underpaying policyholders and claimants.
And you know what we do at My Philly Lawyer when that happens? I'll share with you one of our tactics. I'm sure it's worked for us. Progressive Insurance Company, to name names, was an insurance company whose adjusters were just as you described. They would come up with some ridiculously low number. You couldn't shake them from that number, no matter how much logic and evidence you produced. And they would then, at that point, let's say I thought the case might be worth $15,000, they would offer me $3,500. And nothing would shake them from that. And every week or month, they'd call back, and then they'd go from $35 to $3,750 and say, well, why wouldn't you take it? It's the fair number. So I got tired of dealing with them. And every single case that came into the office from Progressive, when I determined it was the right time, went into suit. It never went to the adjuster for a pre-suit discussion. And it drove them crazy because I essentially said to the adjusters, you're irrelevant in the claims process. Your numbers make no sense. I will not deal with you. I will only deal with counsel. And I will only deal with counsel at the foot of the steps of the courthouse if they ever give me the real number. And I did this for about 18 months, 2 years. Every single Progressive claim went into suit, and they started to make fairer offers. I think it worked. In other words, in order to deal with these folks, you got to deal with them from a position of power.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a basic point. You know, the advertising suggests that you're in good hands, but you're on your side. It's not the case. The insurance company isn't your enemy, but they're not your friend either. Right? You have to deal with them as a business. And sometimes with a good company, you do that by providing them information and being cooperative. Sometimes with a company that's less interested in serving their policyholders, you have to be more aggressive. And for most people, in large cases, that requires professional help.
Jay, I want to thank you for joining us on Court Radio this morning. And folks, if you want Jay's book, you go to Amazon.com and purchase Delay, Deny, and Defend, Practices of the Insurance Industry That You Really Need to Know Before Your Next Claim. Jay, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome. Good to talk to you.
All right. Take care.
Take care.
Folks, if you have a question, stay right on the line. We'll be right back after this quick break.
If you've been injured on the job and are entitled to workers' comp, you need someone fighting for you from the start. Call Jeffrey Gross, attorney at law. Don't rely on your employer or insurance company to get it right. Call 215-512-1500. If you're entitled to workers' comp or it's being challenged, Jeffrey Gross can help get the money you deserve, and he won't get paid unless you get paid. Call 215-512-1500. Jeffrey Gross, attorney at law, representing Pennsylvania's injured workers for more than 20 years.
Are you in a financial legal squeeze? Unable to work because of an accident with your legal case still not settled? Lawsuit Funding Solutions can help you pay the bills while you wait. If you have a pending lawsuit, call 877-697-7352. It can take time for a lawsuit to settle. Lawsuit Funding Solutions is here to help you get back on track. And you won't owe them a thing if your case doesn't settle or you don't receive a judgment. Get out of the squeeze today. Call 877-697-7352.
If you have legal problems and need answers, call my Philly lawyer, Dean Weitzman, first at 215-227-2727 for personal injury, medical malpractice, birth injury, and more. Call Dean first.
He will fight for your rights. That's what Dean Weitzman is all about.
Call my Philly lawyer, Dean Weitzman, first. 215-227-2727. My Philly lawyer. When winning matters most. For 20 years, Center City Medical Center has provided premium expert medical services for Philadelphia. Whether you need musculoskeletal rehab or an immigration physical, call 888-945-EXAM. Our board-certified physicians have more than 80 years' experience from post-injury rehab to DNA paternity testing. To make an appointment at one of our three convenient locations, call 888-945-EXAM. Get premium expert care. Center City Medical Center, serving Northeast, North, and Center City, Philadelphia.
Hello.
Hey.
Okay.
Sans music.
Yeah, we just popped right back on. Okay. Welcome back to Court Radio. We have a guest. We had a guest.
We had a guest, yes.
Jay Fineman, who was fabulous. He wrote a book, Delay, Deny, and Defend, the Insurance Industry's Bad Practices. Speaking of insurance claims, let's talk to Ron from Philly, who's got one quick question. Ron, what's your question?
Yeah, on an insurance claim. Do you have to pay taxes on it?
What kind of claim is it? For what? What are you claiming?
Accident claim.
Bodily injuries?
Yes, slip and fall.
Okay.
Easy answer.
Easy answer is no taxes paid on bodily injury claims. They're the only tax-free money in America right now.
Well, you know, we want people to understand this is not a lottery. You're not winning money. It's not income to you. It's compensation for something that you've lost. Meaning enjoyment of your life, you're in pain, you're being compensated for that. So it's not taxable because it's not income to you. You're not making money.
It just replaces that which you lost. So you lost $100, you get $100 back. So, all right, the answer is, now, if it is for, let's say,
lost wages
or something, then you might have a tax responsibility. But generally speaking, 99.9% of the time, bodily injury, personal injury claims are not taxable, Ron, and you can enjoy the money and get back on the road to recovery.
Great.
All right. Thank you for calling Court Radio. And, Ron, stay on the line. We're going to get your address. We have a Court Radio T-shirt just for you.
Thank you.
All right. Folks, we want to thank you for being a part of Court Radio. Without our call-in guests, we couldn't do it. Our number always is the same. If you got questions that you didn't get a chance to get answered, by all means, give us a call during the week, 215-227-2727. That's the number to call. If you can't reach us at that number, you can always go to the website. It's www.myphillylawyer.com, the place to go for your legal questions. Thanks for being a part of the show. We'll see you next week, same time, same place.
Bye-bye.
The preceding was a paid program of MyPhillyLawyer.com.